This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright. And on today's program, we have an exciting program. We have our good friend John Switzer joining us, managing partner, Impact Commercial. And he is bringing on today the associate managing partner there, Amanda Lamb, who's new to the program. Today, we're talking what's going to happen at the end of this calendar year. We're breaking down what they foresee for 2026. Where's the Bank of Canada's overnight posted rate going? And so much more. We do run long here. So without further ado, let's get to our show today with John Switzer, managing partner, and Amanda Lamb, associate partner, Impact Commercial. Enjoy, guys.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
All right, we're here today with Amanda Lamb, Associate Managing Partner, and John Switzer, Managing Partner, Impact Commercial. Guys, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Yeah, great thing.
Thanks so much for joining us. And John, you've been on the program lots before. Amanda, this is your first time joining us. So Amanda, why don't we give you the floor so you can tell us more about yourself, your background, and how you end up at Impact Commercial?
So let's make this very quick and simple. 2 decades at a financial institution. So I did commercial banking and finally, I guess, woke up and decided to leave the institution and to become a broker. So my specialty being in the finance industry for 2 decades at the bank, business financing side, whether that's with real estate or without real estate, my goal has always been to help businesses grow. And also with business acquisition. So joining Impact has been pretty amazing. It's quite a great family here, as you know, Corey. And it's definitely sharpened my skills in commercial real estate. I'm having a lot more eye-opening to deals in the income property space, multifamily, construction development, CMHC. So from, you know, an old banker here, we never saw that in my level of banking. So
gotcha.
It's been amazing to kind of jump on that learning curve again and to kind of, yeah.
Awesome. And John, we've had you on so many times, but do you want to give us a refresher? Obviously, your background and how you end up with Impact.
Yeah, so I spent several years in banking in my early days out of college, and then that morphed into a role in the investment world for a number of years, almost 7 years at a major independent investment firm. And then one of my clients there is now my business partner, Alan. And we stayed in touch when I left. And around that time, he was leaving Blue Shore. And we reconvened as Impact Commercial. And it's been quite a ride since 2016 when Impact was founded.
Well, you guys are the experts. We've come through 2025. We're now recording this on Friday, October 10th. We're getting into the final stretch of 2025, heading into 2026. What is going on in the finance world? Tell us all the good, the bad, and indifferent.
Sure. I'll take that, I guess, more from a real estate angle, which would
absolutely
be, you know, we've all seen the overnight rate come down at the Bank of Canada. And all indications are that trend is going to continue. So we're finally headed down, you know, back towards lower rates, although I don't think anybody expects we're going to see the lows that we saw during COVID and during also, you know, 2008, 2009. The global financial crisis was only two times in our lifetimes when we've seen rates that low. But one of the interesting things we are seeing at the same time is that bond yields are a little sticky here. And for those listeners who don't know, bond yields are what dictate fixed mortgage rates. So overnight rate is directly tied to the prime rate and variable rate loans, whereas fixed rate loans are tied to bond yields. So I would say mostly because of an expectation of inflation rising in the future, you know, bonds are just being sticky here. So we're not seeing, for example, the five-year bond yield fall in lockstep with the Bank of Canada. And, you know, a bunch of the bank economists even think that we could see bond yields go higher over the next couple of years as the bank continues to cut and then eventually, you know, level out, and somewhere down the line they're going to be raising rates again at the Bank of Canada. So how
does that impact, sorry for the pun, the commercial real estate side of things with regards, for those listeners who may not understand how our commercial rates are impacted by the bond yields, does that tie in together for those listeners that aren't aware of that?
On the investment side of commercial real estate, we don't see too many variable rates. We, you know, in a simplified explanation, it's more expensive in commercial. Typically in residential, you get prime minus with the variable, but in commercial, almost every loan is prime plus. So what we end up seeing is a big discount to variable almost all the time with fixed rates, and fixed rates drive investment and owner user properties. On the construction side, land and construction financing is very, very much steered by variable rates. So until a property is stabilized, you know, you're only looking at variable. And that's part of the reason that, you know, that construction's in such a tough spot right now, and land as an asset class, just because we saw rates go sky high on the variable side, and obviously a whole bunch of other competing forces that could be a whole nother episode, I think.
So how does one get construction financing right now? Like, you guys are always on the front line. You're dealing with borrowers. You're dealing with lenders with regards to this stuff. How do you even make sense of these numbers, and who is trying to get construction financing? Have you guys just seen it come to like a hit a brick wall, I'm assuming?
I think we've all seen it hit a bit of a brick wall. You know, the very large developers, the household names, they're, you know, if they're building a master plan community, they're building through all the stages of the cycle. So, you know, they're not slowing down, you know, mega projects in any cycle. But for the average, mom and pop or even like mid-tier developer, the numbers, especially in the Lower Mainland, just don't pencil out. You've still got elevated land costs relative to 4 or 5 years ago, even though there's been a haircut here. We've still got much higher interest rates than we had during COVID, even though they have also come down. You've got, you know, construction costs still, again, elevated. Maybe coming down here is what we're hearing, but everything's higher than it was 5 years ago. And, you know, during COVID, the whole market adjusted to rock bottom interest rates. So that was kind of the new norm, the new stability. And then when rates started going up, it just threw everything basically off kilter. And we're still in that unbalanced environment right now.
Is there anything on your side from the financing aspect that you think could assist in getting more developments going? Obviously, there's lots of challenges with costs and REDMA and all of this other stuff. Is there anything on the financing side that you think that could help stimulate development right now?
I think what we're hearing is the best lever that could be pulled right now is the municipal charges, right? Like that's really the only one that is within anyone's control. So all those development costs, you know, you hear these stories about, what is it, like 35% of a condo is just in municipal fees. So
yeah,
on $1 million build, you're $350. Don't quote me on that. I guess I'm on a podcast, so I kind of quoted it, but it's high, right? So that's the one thing they can adjust. Other than that, I mean, we're not going to see rates go too much lower here, even with a couple more cuts. You know what? I'd say that maybe the next best lever is that because there's lots of trades looking for work, those cost pressures will continue to come down. Will it be enough? Will those things together, interest rates and trades, be enough to spur development again? I don't know. I think it could be more of like we need to wait for the existing inventory to work through the system and get absorbed. So I think it's more of honestly a patience thing. You know, it might take 18 to 24 months before we really start to tighten up the supply. And then the fundamentals will just come back in check, assuming interest rates are, still within check as well.
You guys mentioned income producing properties. And Amanda, you said too that you're now more exposed to that through Impact. What type of levels are you seeing with regards to income producing properties coming in? Would you say, are these levels of deals coming in greater than maybe expected, or are they still below maybe what you guys would expect at this thing, considering where we are and we're kind of hopefully putting a lot of 2024, early 2025 behind us?
Yeah, on my side, I'm seeing a lot that's coming in more on the sense that the typical bank lenders are starting to politely push them out or do the exit. I mean, there's been a fair amount of income producing properties that has been done as a one-off where a straight investor bought a property, did the financing, and that was kind of it. So banks are right now kind of balancing their balance sheet and they're looking at what's being profitable to the bank and what's not. Income producing properties now are very done on a relationship basis, especially like the one that offers so. So what I'm seeing a lot is more on a sense of them being pushed out at lenders and finding a new home for it.
Is there any particular asset class or even marketplace where you're seeing more deals come in from right now?
I can speak to that again from the real estate side. Is you're seeing some of the big institutional money come back into the market a little bit. Like we've seen some big transactions in the last few weeks in multifamily and even in office. But frankly, we're not exposed to that at our level on a daily or even a weekly or monthly basis. But what we're seeing with more of like the meatier market volume is those owner users are the first to make sense of getting back into the market, just because lease rates haven't come down too much. And some of them are looking at renewals and they've seen property values come way back.
Yeah.
You know, 15 to 20% haircuts on real estate. So all of a sudden they're recalibrating that relationship between mortgage costs and lease costs. And it's making sense for a lot of groups right now. We are seeing, it's mostly in the smaller communities, which are still great places to invest, but We've had a couple of nice, retail transactions on Vancouver Island.
Nice.
In the interior, like national anchor tenant, strip mall type investments that all the lenders like right now and have, 10 to 15 year potential redevelopment horizons. So good cash flow, good value upside. Those are certainly, everybody's after those.
Yeah, right now, so. It feels like everyone's chasing the same product right now. Everyone wants a grocery-anchored retail with upside and all of that. We just don't really have enough inventory to deal with it. And that's kind of always been the plague on the brokerage side of things, is all that good inventory, whether it's really hot and good industrial, or you go back years ago, office was a big trend. Now it's retail, that there's never sort of been a good enough supply to service the demand for it. So, John, you mentioned earlier about interest rates. They've come down a little bit. Now we're referring to the overnight posted rate, the Bank of Canada, which is currently 2.5. Everything you guys are seeing, everything you guys are reading, everything you guys are hearing, where does this go? Does it continue to trend downwards? And maybe where's the bottom?
Obviously, we get our information from people with more expertise than us, being the bank economists, is pretty much our best source of information. And I know, Doug Porter's been on the podcast
before.
at least once, maybe twice. And so I really like Doug. I do follow him as closely as anyone else. So we were on a recent webinar with him, and he believes that we'll have 25 basis point cuts at the next two meetings this year, which are October and December. And then one more cut in the first half of next year. He can maybe correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think he ended up thinking we're going to be down at 1.75 to 2% on the overnight rate, which is aggressive. Obviously not impossible. So, if that were to happen, we could see bond yields come down a little bit, but again, I think we wouldn't see as much movement on the 10 to 30 year end of the yield curve. It would probably be more at that 1-3 year end of it. I don't know if the 5 year would even budge much on that either. So we could be looking at sort of the nearing the bottom of the fixed rate space. But what we could see, importantly, is lender spreads tighten up. So if we do get the overnight rate continuing to come tumbling down, we could get a lot more bullishness in the real estate and lending side of things. And, we could see average kind of spreads over bonds go from currently, call it 2%. Maybe they come down to 1.5 to 1.6%, which happened, in the middle of COVID when rates got really, really cheap. The spreads also tightened. So that's when we were seeing crazy low interest rates in the mid twos for commercial investment. Don't see us getting there, but we could easily poke into the threes on 5 year yields if this trend continues.
So if I'm buying a building today and I'm coming to you for financing, am I looking to get a 5 year fixed rate, or based on where we're at, would you recommend maybe a 3 year fixed rate type of thing? What would be the recommendation right now, knowing that potentially these rates will continue to fall the overnight with the Bank of Canada?
Yeah, we've been having interesting conversations on that. I can only really speak for myself, and I'm partnered up with Pawnees here, so I can speak for Pawnees and I. Is it's a bit of a technical conversation these days. I think 1 year fixed is probably okay, because there's not that much that can go sideways in a year, right? Especially when we're clearly in a trend of accommodation from the Bank of Canada and the US Fed, which also helps provide a tailwind for Canada. 2 years, I feel like, is starting to get a little risky, because there's just more that can happen in a 2 year period. You could have, let's say real estate gets a bunch of wind at its back and we start seeing inflation rearing up again because of some traction back in the real estate market. That could lead to higher bond yields in 2 years. I kind of feel the same about 3 years. I'd sort of stay away from that 2 to 3 year part of the curve. 4 to 5, I think is probably your best bet. Like the average investor isn't going to sleep that well in the next 12 months if they know they're renewing that quickly. Whereas 4 to 5 years, even if things go a little haywire in the interest rate space, you'll have paid down quite a lot of principal. In 4 to 5 years, you can look to re-amortize to bring your payments down. So I still think, 4 to 5 years is going to let most people sleep better at night. The one other thing I would say is some of the lenders will do 10-year conventional terms. And that's something that if bond yields continue to come down here, I'm going to be encouraging people to consider a 10-year depending on their horizon, with the property.
What have you seen that surprised you, whether it be good or bad? I think heading into 2025, we all, like in commercial real estate, finance, probably definitely development, everyone was kind of like, survive to 2025 was a slogan you heard out back east during 2024. 2025 hits, everyone's buying boats again, people are getting Porsches, the year is going to be that good. And then everyone's best friend says, hey, you know what? We might just tariff the world while we're here. And it felt like it came to a grind. And I can say from the brokerage side, at least from our brokerage side, I can say late May, early June, we felt it really start to pick up. July and August were extremely busy, all things considering. September has echoed that. And the start of October, we've still seen that trend. What have you guys seen that's maybe been surprising as of late, good or bad? At least on the finance side. Amanda, we'll start with you.
Mm-hmm. What's been great on my side is actually a very uptick and increase on the business acquisition. Boomers, especially the ones that are running the business, are finally ready to kind of hang up the hat. They've finally been able to work their business pre-COVID as well too. So now they're getting the value, the purchase price as what they should be versus trying to sell about 5 years ago. The great thing about this from my perspective as well too, being a broker, is there's less generations for the boomers to pass the business on to.
Gotcha.
Right. So what that comes on a financing side is less internal in the sense of, a management buyout. We're looking at third-party transactions now. So that could be anything from competitors or suppliers that are buying into the business. And, the big third parties and the financials of your private equity firms and cross-border transactions as well. The downside on it is the financing and the due diligence to get these transactions through the lender has gotten a lot more conservative. There is a lot more dotted I's and crossing of the T's and all the documentation that we present to the lenders. And of course, the timing. We get to a certain stage in the financing process, and then sometimes the seller gets a little bit of a cold feet, right? Because again, there's so many things that are happening in the world with the tariffs. They start to pull back a little bit, right? So the positive on this when it comes to commercial real estate is I've had some transactions where it's just been at a standstill and the seller is anxious, the buyer's anxious, and then they'll throw in the real estate. And now we have a much better deal to present to the lenders. But other than that, it's been a longer process, but it's not saying that lenders won't do it. All the good ones, 100%, right? The less tricky ones, and especially the businesses that are selling because they have to, right? They're not making the numbers. The banks and the lenders are pushing them out. Those ones get a little bit tricky, but the positive way of looking at this is sometimes it takes a great buyer to fix a bad business.
Yeah, that's a good point. John, anything you've seen that's been surprising in any capacity?
Well, I think everybody's been a little bit surprised by the sort of rebirth of retail. Like we've really seen the musical chairs of the commercial real estate asset classes over the past several years. Industrial used to be the ugly stepchild, and now it's like then it had its time in the sun as the hot commodity that everybody was after. That kind of ran through its course a little bit. It got overheated, which I think we all saw. And then retail has really come in to sort of fill that void. And I know we've talked a little bit about, grocery anchored retail, but we're also seeing that right down to smaller kind of neighborhood retail, new retail strata product. You know, the lenders are highly supportive of it as well. And then office, I don't know. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily too surprised, because I think it got a little too pessimistic in the office piece, but it is coming back. We've got some really high quality, low cost lenders are saying, send us your office product. They're cherry picking a little bit. You know, no one's going to sugarcoat it. They want the best office because they feel like if they're a first mover on getting back into the office space, they're going to be securing the best assets when everybody else has still got cold feet on it. So yeah, I'd kind of say rebirth of both retail and office.
I don't want to make an obvious statement here, but if you went back to 2023 and read the William Wright reports we put out, we were predicting retail. Now, granted, we're in a little bit of a cheater situation here because we're fielding the phone calls. We kind of get that feeling before it kind of goes. But I think one thing too, and I'll just sort of say why we kind of felt retail might be a good opportunity back then. Obviously, it's trended that way. We didn't necessarily know that. We're making a prediction. But one reason why I think we felt it was a good opportunity, at least on the investment side, because in 2023, a lot of appraisers and bankers all look at historical data. And historical data was not very good for retail because you had COVID in there. And there was a lot of landlords that probably signed very COVID-friendly, or sorry, very tenant-friendly deals for retail because they just didn't know what the landscape would look like. So you had really bad historical data for the asset class, and you had some probably really tenant-friendly lease rates. And then you fast forward a couple of years, and you're not really getting a lot more product built because the companies are so big, no one's going to build them. Now, retail starts to stabilize itself. There probably hasn't been as many transactions as there was before because banks aren't super eager to lend on it. Now, if you could find those good, well-positioned assets, now the market kind of caught up to you. And now it feels like you're almost the smartest person in the room if you would have bought it back then. For us, we're making an educated guess at what could have happened, and it sort of played out that way. But that was one reason why we felt retail might have a good investment opportunity, because there was a lot of tenant-friendly deals done and no new product coming to backfill any more demand that was coming in. So well-positioned retail, I think it's going to continue to trend that way. I don't necessarily know the absorption of industrial is going to really have the absorption. I think a lot of us wanted it to see it right now. And then office, obviously, office is office. But I can say from a brokerage standpoint, we're seeing a lot more office transactions now than we've seen in quite some time. So that, I mean, still got a ways to go, but it finally feels like that one is sort of ticking up from an interest in a deal standpoint.
I agree with you. Yeah, we've seen more office transactions for sure. And I agree with you on industrial. I think the story you're telling about retail and catching up to excess supply is probably going to play out in industrial, but not for maybe another 3 years. So maybe in the next year or two, we're going to see some phenomenal buying opportunities in the industrial space, and musical chairs will continue.
I agree with you on that. A last question here before we get to our six pack of lighthearted questions. If it was your money and it was endless, what are you buying and where with what you're seeing happen right now on the finance side? Any asset class, any BC market. I have to say BC market because instantly people are going to bring up, oh, what about Calgary? We know about Calgary. We beat them 5-1 last night, guys. We got it. In BC, what BC market and what asset class are you guys buying with everything you're seeing right now? Amanda, we'll start with you. We'll put you in the hot seat.
Ooh, in BC, I'm looking at probably the interior a little bit, maybe in the Kootenay area a little bit further, just on the sense of it being outside of Lower Mainland, the numbers I'm seeing works a little bit better for there, as in cash flow as well, okay, too. It's a little bit more affordable. And I think for me on a personal level, I think I would sleep a lot better.
John, your thoughts. Where's your money going?
Yeah, I agree. We're actually seeing some interesting opportunities in Revelstoke as an example. Some just incredible growth there. And everything's happening on an accelerated pace in some of those smaller communities compared to the Lower Mainland, which frankly, let's be honest, is mostly inaccessible for the average investor, right? So yeah, any of those smaller markets that have good population growth, what you want to see from a lending perspective is generally at least 30,000 population is kind of an important threshold for lenders. So, you know, so now we're seeing the major banks, if we call them about an opportunity in Revelstoke, they're excited about it. 5-6 years ago, they would have said, no, it's not for us. But
interesting.
So that's kind of what I'm seeing. That in BC, we actually have a nice mix of growth and cap rates in those smaller markets. Whereas I think if you look at parts of Alberta, they have great cash flow, but you might not believe in the upside, right? You're almost like buying a bond. You're just clipping your coupon. Whereas in BC, I think you can still get a nice mix of growth and an acceptable yield.
Guys, we appreciate you taking the time to sort of fill us in what's happening in the finance world and your predictions. But before we let you go, John, you know how this works. Amanda, you're new to this. We have a six-pack of lighthearted questions that we get to ask you guys so we get to know you a little bit more outside of the office. And because John is pretty much a veteran, I don't think there's any questions we haven't ever asked. John, he's been on so much. Amanda, I've got some for you, and I'm going to throw a bonus question at John after. So Amanda, first question up, where are you vacationing when you find the time?
Somewhere out in the woods.
Somewhere out in the woods. Anywhere you want to go? Anywhere in particular maybe you've been you want to elaborate on?
I'm a big fan of the Gulf Islands. It's a great place to drive out and just kind of sit there and not have anybody bother you.
Awesome. Now, unfortunately, you've done something horrible. You're going to find yourself on death row, but you're allowed one more meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
One? I have like five.
Go ahead. You can have a buffet. Go ahead. We're not going to take your time away.
Well, it's definitely a bowl of pho because I'm Vietnamese, so I have to have that. Then it'll also be a prime rib steak and throw in a burger and probably a piece of pizza for dessert. I've already thought about this.
Sounds good. A book recommendation for our listeners. Doesn't have to be real estate related, but it can.
My last read, I would say, is Lynchpin by Seth. Can't remember his last name. I would recommend that one. I think that one is a great one to read in the sense of just kind of being more mindful of who you want to be and who you want to create versus what society tells you to and not to follow the path.
Great advice. You've had a little too much to drink. You're in a bar and someone gives you a karaoke mic. What song are you going to sing us?
This is actually a true story.
Okay, go ahead. We got time.
It was Aerosmith, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. And I was in San Diego at a karaoke
bar. Oh, wow. Okay, that's good. So you've got experience. Now, how'd it go? What was the end result? Were you getting a standing ovation or did people throw tomatoes at you?
I got half of a standing ovation, awesome. But I must say the audience was probably very intoxicated.
I was recently on a cruise and they had a karaoke night. And I walked by and these people were just so passionate about their karaoke. I don't want to say it was comical because it wasn't, because they were actually pretty good. But just the passion you could feel coming out of that karaoke bar was something else. John, I got last two questions for you here. And our listeners can't see. I can see you on video and over your shoulder there. I see a couple of Canucks things on the wall. So question number one is, are the Canucks going to make the playoffs?
I mean, you're only as good as your last act. And that 4-1 or 5-1 win last
5-1
night?
5-1 last night, yeah. Game
was very...
We're undefeated so far this year. We're Canucks are undefeated in 2025, the season.
Yeah. No, they looked phenomenal. And it was nice, well-distributed points among, lots of new and old players. So that was great to see. I think yes.
Okay, yes. Elias Pettersson, the forward. Over-under on 85 points this year.
Oh, man. Well, if he doesn't get a concussion like he almost did last night, I don't know. Just because I want to see him do well, I'm going to go with the over. But I'm a little. I don't know how much money I'd put on that one. But
okay. Well, here's part B to that question. Over-under on 35 goals for Elias Pettersson.
I got to take the over.
Take the over? There you go. Awesome, guys. Well, we appreciate you guys joining us today. How can our listeners find out more about all the amazing stuff you guys are doing over at Impact Commercial? Amanda, we'll start with you.
Yes, through our LinkedIn. I know we are very active. We post on the deals that we've closed. We've got our website. We've got our Instagram. Obviously, reach out to John or myself or anybody at the team through email. Corey, I know you have all of our information.
Absolutely. And John, anything else to add there before we leave?
No. We're doing our best to get out there in the real estate community. One actually interesting thing I would say is Amanda and Pawnees and Shania's helping out too, are quite active in Wicker. So okay. Women in commercial real estate. So that's been a great thing for them. I know from watching from the outside. So great thing for any guys or gals, you know, new to the industry or not to check out.
Amazing. Well, thank you once again, guys, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you as well, Corey.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you have it, folks. Our show today with John Switzer and Amanda Lamb, Impact Commercial. Outstanding to have them on as always. And really, I think really, really good insight as we talk a lot about the interest rates and where the overnight posted rates go on. But we also kind of break down a little bit how that doesn't affect commercial as much because we are dictated a lot by the bond market. And I think a lot of people have questions on where are things going in the future, where what's the face of commercial real estate look like heading into the end of this year. I think John really unpacks it, also kind of gives us some good insight onto some markets that they're looking, that they think have some really, really good upside as people chase yield. Surprisingly, some of the asset classes that are moving in the right direction and some that maybe aren't. So all around great, great program to have both those people on. For all those looking to do commercial real estate, you can reach out to us at William Wright Commercial anytime. You can reach us at our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. You can visit our website, williamwright.ca, and you can send me an email anytime. Always love hearing from listeners, Corey@williamwright.ca. And we'll be back next week with another great episode. Thanks for joining, guys. Take care.